Breaking the Scarcity Conspiracy. That's our topic today on Bold Steps with Mark Jobe.
The most important thing that could change is not the stock market, a salary boost. The most important thing that can change is your thinking about the resources that you have. And I believe God has a lot to say about that.
Welcome to Bold Steps with Mark Jobe, President of Moody Bible Institute and the Senior Pastor of New Life Community Church in Chicago. I'm Wayne Shepherd. Yesterday, Mark started a message titled Manna and the Scarcity Myth, and today, as we move ahead in our study from the book of Exodus, we're going to learn about how to overcome the scarcity mentality and discover the abundance mentality. If you have your Bible handy, turn with us to chapter 16 of Exodus. We'll pick up with the story of manna raining down from heaven. Mark Jobe has titled our message, In God We Trust, Breaking the Scarcity Conspiracy, and it starts now.
Well, maybe you'll understand it this way. Retailers understand the scarcity principle, and they use it all the time. That's why we have sales, and that's why the retailers advertise and they say, while stock lasts. That means, hey, it's running out quickly. You better come and get yours because there's only a limited supply. Or this week only. Or this is the last one. How many of you were out till wee in the mornings on Black Friday? You man, you're one of the Black Friday shoppers. Come on, be honest. It's okay. My wife was. I mean, she loves it. And she has her strategy down, and it'll say there's only three of these left. Limited supply. And the idea is, if you feel like it's limited, and there's only a few, there's not enough to go around, then you better get early in that line and fight, because if someone else gets it, then you are left with less. Here are the effects of the scarcity mentality. When you start viewing the world that way, when your image of the world is that there's only a certain amount so that if other people get it, there's less for me, then this is what happens. I can't rejoice in other people's success because their win equals what? My loss. So if someone at work starts to get a promotion, I'm not celebrating, wow, he's worked really hard. Great, good job. I'm thinking, hey, there's less for me. When someone else it prospers economically, immediately I don't rejoice with those who get ahead. I'm envious of those that get ahead. In fact, I think that their success equals my loss. A scarcity mentality, when I have a scarcity mentality, I want you to test yourself to see what kind of mentality you have. When I have a scarcity mentality, I have a hard time releasing and giving because I fear that there will not be enough. If I give, I won't have enough. A scarcity mentality. You have a scarcity mentality, you find yourself competing and always trying to win over others. You have to be number one, because unless you're number one, then number two doesn't get as much. And so you find yourself competing. And maybe it's subconscious with your neighbor as you they come in and you see what they did with their car. And you look at your car and you say, no, I need to get a nicer one. They upgraded. You're constantly competing with others because it's the idea that I can't let other people get ahead because there's only so much amount of the pie and I need to make sure I'm at the front of the line. You have a scarcity mentality when you compare yourself to others a lot and the feeling of success or failure depends on how you rate. You're not looking at what you have, the house that you live in, the car that you drive, the clothes that you wear, the bank account, and saying, is this enough? And I'm content enough. You look and compare yourself at the rest of the world around you. if you're rating yourself in the top echelon or in the middle, you're okay. But if you feel like your friends have more, then you're not okay. It's not based on your own contentment. It's based on the comparison with others. You have a scarcity mentality if you live with the feeling that something bad is going to happen to me. It's just like there can't be enough. Something's going to break this. Something bad is going to happen. Oftentimes people live with fear and anxiety with the scarcity mentality. Or I have a tendency to hoard and hang tight onto what I have because I'm convinced there's a shortage. There's a shortage. Some of you might qualify for the hoarders program. All you have to do is check out your basement or look in your garage or that pantry. I was like, well, why are you hanging on to this? Well, I may need it. Seriously, you're going to need a broken rake from 1970? I mean, when are you going to need a broken rake? Well, you know, we could fix it and we may need it. It's a little bit of a scarcity mentality. And oftentimes people that have lived through extreme scarcity and sometimes extreme poverty, it's built into their mentality. There may not be enough. The world doesn't have enough to go around. So be very careful. We've all heard stories of people that die virtual millionaires, but they're reusing napkins for 4 months because they don't want to get a new napkin. It's a scarcity mentality. It's the idea that there's not enough to go around, and I really need to hang on to it. Some of you may have played the game Monopoly. My kids love Monopoly. But here's the thing I don't like about Monopoly. The problem with Monopoly is you go to play to say, let's bond together, this will be fun. Everybody starts laughing, okay? And by the time you win Monopoly, at least at my house, everybody's mad at each other. Because the object of the game is what? Is to take everything away from everybody else and to make them go bankrupt. And then when you've taken everything from everybody else and they've gone bankrupt, then you can say, I won. There's just something about that game that, I mean, it's a fun game, but it kind of goes contrary to the spirit in which we are to operate. Now, the opposite of that mentality, of a scarcity mentality, is what I call the abundance mentality. This is approach to the world and the belief that there is enough for everybody. That God has designed the world where there is more than enough to go around. And I want to talk to you about that for a minute. Because I believe the principles about that we're going to encounter in this series are really, really important. Now, I'm not advocating lavish spending. I'm not advocating no savings. I'm not advocating being careless with our money. You've been around my teaching long enough to know that I teach strongly the concept of 10-10-80. Save 10, give 10, and budget yourself to live on 80. How many of you know that principle? If you've been around here, you know that. And it's not an easy principle to put into place, but it's a strong principle. But I want to deal with more the mentality that keeps us in this view of the world, regardless of how much you make or don't make, that keeps many of us unhappy. And you're just as unhappy today making triple or quadruple what you were 20 years ago as you were back then. Because your contentment does not depend on the amount of money that you make. Your contentment is much deeper than that. It depends on the mentality that you have towards resources and finances. The most important thing that could change is not the stock market. The most important thing that could change is not the interest that you get in your CD account. The most important thing that could change your financial status is not a salary boost. The most important thing that can change is your thinking about the resources that you have. And I believe God has a lot to say about that. And so I would like to read out of Exodus chapter 16 what I believe is a powerful teaching tool that God used to speak into the people of Israel when they were in the midst of a scarcity mentality. Well, you can't be any more scarce than living in the desert.
Listening to the Bible teaching of Mark Job here on Bold Steps, and maybe today's message has inspired you to go deeper in your biblical study. If that is the case, let me invite you to sign up for a free devotional email from Mark. It's called the Bold Stepper Weekly. It arrives directly to your inbox each Monday morning. To sign up for the free resource, go to our website, boldstepsradio.org. And speaking of free resources, if you're in the mood to hear some great Christmas music, we have it available all day, every day for you right now at musicofchristmas.org. That's musicofchristmas.org. It's a great way to focus on the real reason for the season. And you can also listen through the Moody Radio app. That app is available free in your app store. So check out Music of Christmas. Let's get back into the second half of today's message now on Bold Steps.
Let me set it up for you. Here it is. The people of Israel have spent 400 years in slavery. It was Joseph that originally brought his father and 11 brothers to live in Egypt with their family members because there was a famine in the land that they were from. And he brought their wives and sons and daughters. And the Bible goes on to tell us how they grew in that land. The Pharaoh that was there forgot Joseph. And within 400 years, that's a long time, 400 years, the people of Israel had become a subjugated people, a people in slavery. They were treated as pieces of property. They worked hard. They were a minority in the majority land of Egypt. They had the low-paying jobs. They were viewed as scum. The Egyptians stayed away from them. There was the Jewish neighborhood, and then there was the Egyptian neighborhood, and the Egyptians didn't like to go into the Jewish neighborhood because those were lower-class people. They had less opportunity, less education, less finances, less rights. Certain things never change, do they? 400 years they lived in that kind of environment and developed a slave mentality. They developed the mentality of we are a lower class, and finally God decided to liberate the people of Israel through an unlikely candidate by the name of Moses. And God raised Moses up when he was 80 years old. God gave him supernatural power through a series of plagues. The people of Israel were liberated from the Egyptian domination. And finally, with the last plague, the death of the firstborn child, they were set out into the desert, heading towards the promised land. But between them and the promised land, there was a lot of desert. They're only a couple weeks out into the desert experience. There's about 1.2 million people. That's hard to get them going. You have enough trouble getting five here on Sunday morning. Try moving a million people through the desert. They're a couple weeks in the desert and they start to realize, hey, nothing grows in the desert. It's a wasteland out here in the desert. We can't grow tomato plants. There's no water. I mean, this is the land of scarcity. This is the place that brings death. It's just sand hill after sand hill after sand hill. No one lives here. Only the hardiest animals survive in this place. This is the land of scarcity. Yet God was taking them to the land of plenty. Scarcity in the desert was just an intermediate place as they were on their way to the promised land. But in the middle of the desert, they begin to do what often we do with a scarcity mentality. They began to complain. They began to look to the heavens and say, God, what are you doing? I mean, we had it better before. 400 years of slavery, and listen what they began to say to the heavens. They began to complain about where they were at, where God was taking them, and where they needed to be. It tells us in Exodus chapter 16, verse 2 and 3. I want us to stand for the reading of the word. In Exodus 16, verse 2 and 3, I'm just going to read two verses for you. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." Word of the Lord, you may be seated. I want you to note, now who are these people? These are the people that God has just liberated from slavery. This is the people that God has taken out. They're no longer pieces of property. He's leading them to freedom. But they have a scarcity mentality that's been beaten in them through years of subjugation and slavery. They don't have a God mentality. They have a slave mentality. And so as soon as they begin to experience and face some scarcity in their life, they begin to grumble against God and complain against the heavens, and they say, "Hey, God, what are you doing? We were better off in our old life. We were better off. At least we had meat. Oh, I know they whipped us. And I know they treated us as a piece of property, but at least we had cucumbers. Here we are now in the desert, and there's just scarcity around us." They began to grumble against God. They began to grumble against Aaron and against Moses. They began to get full of fear that God had led them to a place where they would die in scarcity. And there's something that happens when we start traveling through the land of scarcity. In fact, many of you have experienced that. And as we travel through the land of recession, even in this country, the fear, the dark cloud, sometimes begins to hover over people. They tell us that when the unemployment rate changes even 1% in a nation, and I think right now we're at 8.5% or so, when the unemployment changes a 0.5% or 1%, the amount of suicides increase, the amount of divorces increase, the amount of addiction-related problems surge. Why? Because not because all those people are affected by it, but it's the dark cloud of the future. The fear, the anxiety begins to get a grip on people, and the mentality of scarcity begins to sit in, and now we begin to fear and worry, and we begin to grab what we have instead of looking for greater opportunities, and it begins to have its effect on our lives. That's exactly what happened in the desert. 1 million people grabbed by the mentality of scarcity, and so they grumble against God, and here's what God does. God does an incredible thing with them. He teaches them about the scarcity myth through something called manna. You know what manna means? It means, what is it? Because that's exactly what the people of Israel said as God started raining sort of thin bread from heaven, and the people saw it and they said, "What is this?" It was God's solution to their problem. So I want you to understand, manna teaches us several things about the scarcity mentality. If you're taking notes, jot them down. Number one, manna teaches us that the source of our provision is ultimately God. Notice what it says in verse 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gathered on the other days." So God said to them, "I'm going to test them. I'm going to rain down from heaven what is sort of thin slices of bread." He says, "I'm going to rain bread down from heaven, and the people are going to go out. In this way, I will test them." What was he testing? He was testing to see how people would respond and how they would break out of that scarcity mentality. I believe that it's no coincidence that God had the bread rain from heaven. Because when it starts raining or it starts snowing, what do we automatically do? You look to the heavens. I believe that God could have caused the manna to come from the earth. He could have caused it to come from a well. He could have brought it about various different ways, but God decided to rain it from heaven. Why? So that a million people would look to the heavens and know that it was God that was the provider.
Well, this is a great place to pause our teaching just for today. Mark Jobe will bring us additional steps for breaking the scarcity conspiracy next time on Bold Steps, so be sure to join us. But Mark, I was just literally handed this letter from a listener from a federal correction complex. He writes to us from prison. Can I share this with you?
Absolutely.
This man says, "I listen to Bold Steps daily. Mark Jobe's preaching is instrumental in my daily walk and maturing in Jesus Christ." Again, this man is writing from prison. He says, "The message from today was a blessing. God speaking and confirming to me some truths that he's been teaching me, giving me clarity on, and making me aware during my quiet times recently and during my study of the Word." Then he goes on and says this, "My sister and I have been discussing some spiritual things and encouraging each other and trying to figure out and live according to God's word and seeking God for clarity and what this calling is and the gifts he's equipped us with and looking for ways in which we can demonstrate his love and our gifts to others, me in prison and her in the real world." And then he concludes by saying, "I want to introduce her to Bold Steps and other messages and resources on Moody Radio. These have been a wonderful source of nourishment for me and of great value." And then he signs it, David. My goodness, I mean, how does that strike you to get that kind of a letter?
Wow. David, I just want to say, if you're listening, we are so encouraged by your growth in God and by this word of encouragement. And, you know, Wayne, over the years, as a pastor in the city of Chicago and some of the neighborhoods I've pastored, I've literally worked with hundreds of mainly men that have come out of an incarceration background. Mm-hmm. And some of those men now, you would see them and you would never know that that was part of their story, because they're such strong men of God with healthy families, growing, mentoring, discipling other people.
Christ makes the difference, doesn't he?
He really does. And so, David, I want to say, hey, this is just a part of your story. This doesn't determine your future. And I have full expectation that you're going to get out and grow in the Lord and make a difference for the kingdom of God. So be encouraged, brother. Use all the time you have right now to grow in God.
And we'd love to hear from even more of you. Just reach us through our website, boldstepsradio.org. This month, our theme is Everyone, Everywhere, Starting Here. And at Bold Steps, we are committed to taking the gospel message out into the world to reach every person everywhere. When you invest in this Bible teaching program, you're ensuring this life-saving message is available to those who really need to hear it, like that man in prison that just wrote to us. To make a generous year-end donation, just go to boldstepsradio.org. Or if it's easier, you can call us too. The number to dial is 844-615-7363. Now, when you give a gift of any amount this month, we'll be happy to send you a book called The Case for Hope, Looking Ahead with Confidence and Courage. Discover why the gospel of Jesus Christ is the only source of confidence we need. Well, I'm Wayne Shepherd, inviting you to come back again tomorrow when Mark looks at a passage that will help us adopt an abundance mindset. Our message is called Manna and the Scarcity Myth, and you won't want to miss it. That's Wednesday on Bold Steps with Mark Jobe. Bold Steps is a production of Moody Radio, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute.